Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
So I'd like to welcome everybody for this EAN Cast, the weekly neurology. It's a very interesting topic for today. Today we'll have a little bit deep diving in early neurorehabilitation topic. My name is Dafin Mureșanu. I am a member of the managing group of the neurorehabilitation panel of European Academy of Neurology, and I'm also the co-chair of neurotraumatology scientific panel. And this is my great pleasure today to have as an important guest Professor Karin Tisserands. Welcome, Karin, for this absolutely interesting topic, challenging one. And I would like briefly to introduce you and just to say that Professor Karin Tisserands is a specialist in neurology, physical medicine, and rehabilitation. She is the co-founder of the Swiss Society of Neurorehabilitation and president of Swiss Neurobehavioral Society. Professor Tisserands was the head of the post-acute neurorehab clinic for many years, and now she's leading a mobile transversal neurorehabilitation team at the Lausanne University Hospital, and she's the head of acute rehab unit of neurology services. And this is important. I think there are exceptionally breakthroughs in this field, and I would like very much Karin, to start with a simple question and to warm up a little bit. What would be the definition of early neurorehabilitation in your vision?
Thank you, Dafin, for your nice presentation. It's an important question. The definition is quite different from one country to the other. In our university hospital, quality standards are based on neurorehabilitation in the acute phase, meaning in the first days after admission to hospital. The term acute neurorehabilitation implies several approaches that relate to the potential of the residual brain plasticity after brain injury and the brain's ability to respond to external stimuli.
Yes, this is very interesting, and let's go a little bit further and see how do you manage these approaches with unstable, non-communicative patients, Karin?
So it was a long way of experience to understand that it's possible. Ways of exploiting the brain's ability to reorganize itself to compensate the impaired function, especially also communication, to enrich the person's environment through multimodal sensory stimulation, and to mobilize the patients in and out of bed, and that can be actively but also passively. To do this, acute neurorehabilitation uses three main strategies. One, maximize spontaneous recovery by managing complications through medical monitoring. Secondly, promotes neuroplasticity through rehabilitation interventions by a multidisciplinary team. That's important because each person from the team gives another aspect than the input of the patients and to open his contact with the environment. And thirdly, we have to boost independence and quality of the life through compensatory interventions.
Very interesting, Karin. I would be very much interested in the very, I would say, specific aspect. What type of patients are eligible for this early neurorehabilitation?
Thank you for an important question, because all patients with severe neurological lesions and hospitalized in the intensive, intermediate or acute care departments need early neurorehabilitation. Currently, mobilization programs for stroke patients are much more widely studied than other neurological diagnoses, but we have to work on this.
Yeah, this is interesting. Can you explain why? It's this situation.
Yes, these stroke patients, they are vascular pathologies. And the hemodynamic mechanism may be influenced by vertical position. Indeed, for stroke patients, up to the beginning of 2006, the fear of hypertension, which has never really been demonstrated, prevented patients being taken out of bed. They blocked around the bed and we couldn't touch to these patients. Because, nevertheless, there are many complications associated with this bed rest. And the first step for acute rehabilitation was to show the feasibility, to diminish the fear, and the effect of early mobilization out of bed on the reduction of bed rest complications.
Yes, indeed, this fear was dominating the field for some time. And how did you prove it that this is absolutely, I would say, safe and things are going well?
There's a very important person, the Australian group of Julia Bernhardt, contributed significantly by comparing standard stroke units to specialized units using early mobilization out of bed. Their results showed the feasibility of early mobilization, and the early mobilization patients had far fewer complications associated with bed rest. So in quite the same time our unit began our work, together with our stroke specialist, Professor Patrick Michel, in our university hospital, and we were able, after a review of mobilization and the definition, and then randomized the patients, and then we could, after 7 days, which was before the standards to lay the patients in bed, reduce this to 12 hours. 12 hours, it's a half a day. And after admission. But it's very important, we have to follow a strict protocol and to follow when there's any complication to come back. But these patients go out of bed after 12 hours now.
Yeah, this is very clear that, you know, this mobilization and rehab generally, it's a very personalized process, very individualized. And of course, patients should be biologically stable. Are there exceptions to this early mobilization out of the bed, according to your experience?
Yes, unfortunately. Mobilization of patients with subarachnoid hemorrhage is still hampered by a vicious cycle of treatment of the vasospasm by strict bed rest and treatment using nimodipine inducing autostasis. Then we give adrenaline. We need to remember in all these cases that the neurovegetative system collapses after 1 week of bed rest, as was already shown by Paolucci in Physical Medicine Rehabilitation 2000. There's a very important work guiding us also for the mobilization program of stroke patients, but we have really to be aware after a week the autostasis are much more dangerous than in the beginning. Therefore, further studies, especially also in the special interest group, early mobilization in the WFNR, need to be carried out in this domain with precise definition of early mobilization and early neurohabilitation. It's not the same. Early mobilization is a part of early neurohabilitation, and it should integrate both aspects.
Yes, this is clear. It looks like your vast experience is confirming this. Let's look at this important aspect from a different angle. Are coma patients included in this acute neurohabilitation process?
Absolutely. The coma patients is also our focus from our research. And both intubated and sedated patients, in addition to patients treated by physiotherapists for pulmonary complication, as it was done a long time before, now nurses are part of the neurohabilitation program, incorporating the neurosensory approach during the morning rush, for instance. And the ergotherapists and neuropsychologists are immediately around their bed for positioning and observation of the motor behavior. And thanks to the robotic devices like Erigo or Waymo, and Leto, it's a motomat we can bring up to the bed, cycling ergometer, these patients can be mobilized passively in bed and positioned vertically.
Yes, this is very, very important and very interesting, and would be also interesting to know on what standards of treatment do you base the method itself and the intensity of the program.
So fortunately, the German and Austrian colleagues did a lot of work in describing their phase B. Phase B is their acute neurohabilitation, being a little bit later on than we begin. But this was the base of our standards. So the strict standards are that the patient has to have special characteristic of independence. It means less than 30 on the early Bartle index. It means very dependent patients, but also unstable patients. They have to be at least 7 days in this dependency, have a rehabilitation potential. That is a tricky definition. And receive the at least 300 minutes of treatment per day. What we could now do, we could include the nursing care in this rehabilitation approach. And so it's also possible to do it the weekend. And there's a requirement of 1 hour per week and all the year an interprofessional teaching program has to be assisted by the team.
Yes, indeed, very interesting. And it would be also important to understand how do you organize this process of acute neurohabilitation.
So we have to underline that tremendous progress has been made in the medical and technical management of neurological and neurosurgery diseases. And it seems normal, just normal, that we have to value these interventions by an appropriate neurohabilitation plan. And it means we have to set up a neurohabilitation system from the acute phase onwards with the aim to rapidly establish a suitable care plan, defining measurable objectives based on diagnosis and therapeutic indicators, justifying the techniques used and assessing the intensity and duration of treatments and therapies during acute hospitalization, which is not always easy because in acute hospitalization, sometimes there are more priority for investigation. So the treatment has to adapt to the acute program from the patient. And then we have to ensure appropriate investment. Patients with rehabilitation potential should be treated. And then this is a very large aspect and dependent on a cultural difference from one country to the other country. We have to be wide open to this aspect, what is rehabilitation potential. And then finally, patient selection, the assessment of their potential and appropriate referral is an integral part of the rehabilitation pathway.
Yes, indeed. I believe it's important to mention a key aspect related to the safety of the intervention. Is the intervention treatment dangerous in some sense?
It took us about 12 years that nobody anymore in the intensive care is scared when the acute rehabilitation team arrives. Because why? It's not a stimulation for stimulation. It's important that the intensive treatment is justified by the current research literature advocating the effectiveness of multidisciplinary intensive cognitive treatment. That's right. But which is much more important is that the challenge of rehabilitation, however, is to focus individual more on the person and the functional consequences of their deficits rather than on the deficits themselves. So we never will be dangerous because we adapt to the capacity of the patient.
Yes. Can you present a little bit the evidence and tell us how can you give, let's say, us an example of your scientific approach?
That's the most difficult question and the most difficult challenge. We have to make evidence-based research. We are in a university hospital. Nevertheless, we have a very heterogeneous population and double-blinded randomized studies with therapists is difficult. So we constructed a very clinical integrated research on the evaluation, neurohabilitation, and outcome assessment of the neurolesion patient in the acute phase. And thanks to a national funding, now we could permit to correlate the clinic approach with a multimodal model integrating functional neuroimaging and neurophysiological examination. And our main focus concerns diagnosis and definition of coma and neurosurgical approach. And nevertheless, there are other points very important as the very early verticalization, for instance, by robotic, and to look what swallow complications can be improved by quantifying swallowing. So there are different aspects, but we have to do it on a setting which is individual objectives. And in order to can quantify it, we use an individual goal assessment for the patient according to the International Classification of Functioning, Disability and Health, the ECF model, incorporating the SMART method criteria. And that permits us to offer the right treatment for the patient and the adequate outcome scale, and thereby increase the motivation and adherence to treatment.
Very interesting. I think we have to come to an end with our discussion, but not before telling us how do you finance the certain high cost of this treatment, Karin?
A tricky question. Yes, we need resources, and that is expensive. So in Switzerland, we have a DRG for the acute neurohabilitation, and we must fulfill strictly these criteria and document them meticulously. The intensity of the rehabilitation sessions of the therapists and nurses together, they have to go to give 300 minutes per day to prove the evolution of the goal assessment, prove the assistance of the team of weekly postgraduate education program. That's not easy to do sometimes. And they have to assist either the interprofessional models six times a year. And then we can go ahead.
Yes, I think this is a great approach. So I believe that putting a lot of focus on this educational aspect and also pushing the acute neurohabilitation as a specialization, I think that would be the future. Would you like to add something before we'll close this very interesting discussion?
Yes, I thank you for this last aspect. It's important that we have the support of the societies of our European Society of Neurohabilitation, AMN, WFNN, in order to have an approach, what we want to ask to the young neurologist in getting a neurorehabilitation specialist and all the teams. So we have to respect the difference from one country to the other. We solved now this problem in Switzerland given a value to 2 years of neurorehabilitation in the whole specialty. But it's important that we have a common view of the content of the catalog of the list, what we want that these young neurologists have to learn and practice.
Yes, I think it's a very important point, and I'd like to thanks a lot for your great work, for all your developments, and just to emphasize on a very important aspect that EAN and the European Federation of Neurohabilitation, they are important societies working hand in hand and trying to create a comprehensive approach all over Europe and also to collaborate with global organizations in this respect, and will strongly support, and in my capacity of president of EFNR, I would like to congratulate you for your contribution to this field, and our societies will work together hand in hand as we did in the past to accomplish these goals. Just to mention that we have a good cooperation also with ESO, European Stroke Organization, and we work together for this Stroke Action Plan for Europe. And I believe that your approach, it's very important in this respect. Thank you very much, and I hope this interesting dialogue was helpful, particularly for the young generation to understand better what's up in this tremendously exciting field of early neurohabilitation. Thank you very much, Karin.
Thank you very much, Daphne.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EAN Cast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.